Hello, curiosity seekers. Welcome to Dissecting Medical History. I'm Ange. I'm a travel nurse, medical history enthusiast, and your host. If you're looking for a storytelling formatted podcast with fun and fascinating topics on history and bios, then you are in the right spot. Please note this is not in any way medical advice. If you have anything that's ever discussed in any of the podcast episodes, please seek medical attention. Now, let's get this story started. Today, I'm paying homage to another podcast that I adore, What's Her Name? The hosts, Katie and Olivia, are sisters who do a podcast about fascinating women you've never heard of, but should have. They do an amazing job of immersing the listener into the story and do sound bites with experts they've interviewed and include them into the storytelling. Kind of reminds me of like an NPR style. One of their episodes, which was on Dr. James Barry, caught my attention, and I really wanted to know more about the medical side of this fascinating person. So in today's episode, I'll be talking about just that. And I encourage you all to go and listen to the rest of Dr. Barry's story over on their What's Her Name podcast. They talk about the childhood and a lot more of the other interesting details that I'm not going to be covering. So today, I am going to tell this story to my friend Viv. I brought her back. Hi, Viv. How you been?
Hello. I've been good. It's been a while.
Well, I promised you last time we did an episode together that I would bring you a happier tale. Well, this might not exactly be the one, but there are some positives, and I will try to highlight those in this story very heavily.
Okay.
I know. It's not a complete downer, but it is an interesting story. So this story is about Dr. James Barry. So why would a podcast about females cover Dr. James Barry? Because, you know?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Because Dr. Barry kept a secret till the day he died. After serving 46 years in the British Army, going from hospital assistant to an officer, he died, and against his wishes to be wrapped and buried just how he was in his nightshirt, it was revealed that he was a woman.
Wow.
Dun, dun, dun. So, Dr. James Barry was born Margaret Ann Bulkey in 1789 and had died in 1865, at the age of 71. Dr. Barry was born in Cork, Ireland, which I have been to. Cork is a really, really great little town. And ended up moving to London to get help from her uncle. His uncle. Her, his. So it's really confusing because she was born a woman, ended up being a man. So until the change, I'm going to call her. And then once she changes her identity to Dr. James Barry, then I'm going to start saying he.
Okay.
And I don't think it's because he identified himself as a he. I think he did it in order to do that profession. And he did have an extreme passion for being a physician. But I'm still going to do the he because that seems more appropriate. He moved to London to get help from her uncle, and his name was James Barry, a famous painter. And I'm not going to tell you that story because the What's Her Name podcast does a really good job of all that and talks about his friends and how they formed her into the male form. Barry turned young, uneducated Margaret Ann Buckley into a student of medicine at Edinburgh University. One of the friends was a huge influence on her. His name was General Miranda from Venezuela. The plan was to become a doctor and travel to Venezuela, but Miranda was captured by the Spanish and died from typhoid in captivity. It might have been easier for her to have hidden her identity as a man if she had gone to Venezuela, maybe did like a private practice or something like that. But she didn't choose the easy way. Nope. She chose the hard way. But before she went into the army, the newly self-declared James Miranda Stewart Barry was shaped into not only a boy, but a scholar. It may never have worked had she not been very intelligent. She had to even learn Latin, but she didn't have much of an education growing up. So this was all like crash course in education.
So she had an uncle and they came up with a plan because to get into school, but was there...
Okay. So let me back up then. Margaret and her mother moved to London. For financial reasons, they needed help. So they went to London with James Barry, which was Margaret's mom's brother. Mm-hmm. So they went there. Well, he's this famous painter and he hangs out with influentials, other people who are intellects. And because she's a woman, they wanted to better her chances at getting ahead in life. And when she was younger, she had made a comment to her brother about how if she was a man, she could have been a soldier like her brother. I think she'd always had that desire to be in the army, to join. And so they helped her better her life by becoming a man.
And how old was she when that started to happen?
So that is questionable. When I've read several things and... It was around 14 to 18, somewhere in there, where she went to Edinburgh University. And they did question it because she looked really young anyway. She didn't grow facial hair like a man or a boy that had hit puberty. So they just said, she's just really young. So she was like 14. But I think she was a little older than that. She may have been around 18. So they did this in order to help her chances at life, to make money, because back then two women going it alone, you know, like it was difficult for women. So they were just trying to better her chances.
Okay. So this is still with her mom. This is to help her. Oh, her and her mom, right? Like,
yes. Yeah. Okay. To help the family. Mm-hmm. I don't know what becomes of her mom after all of this. I haven't read anything after that, but for her, her life changes completely. And it could be because once she became a man, she had to give up her former life in order to not be found out. London was always considered kind of her home after that. Whenever she would go traveling, when she had leave, she would come back to London. But she did go to school at the Edinburgh University, where those friends helped her passed the test to get into medical school. This is where I'm going to start referring to Barry with the he pronoun. There's no evidence that Barry felt one way or the other, and even though it was said he was a big flirt with the ladies at parties, there was no evidence of a more intimate relationship with either sex, although there were rumors, which I'll talk about later. It wasn't until 1847... when Elizabeth Blackwell from the UK earned a medical degree in the US. And Mary Edwards Walker was the first female surgeon in the US in 1855. I have an episode on that one called How to Earn a Medal of Honor. And the reason that's important is that first doctor, female doctor, was 1847. Well, Dr. Barry earned his medical degree in 1812. So even though it's not acknowledged that it was a female that was earning that degree, technically he would have been the first known to get a medical degree. But like I said, he wasn't found out until after he had died. Mm-hmm. Also, it might be interesting to note, like, if he could pull it off, how many other people might have been able to pull that off? Like, was there other females that turned their look into more masculine so they can get ahead in life? Maybe not in the army, but maybe in some other capacity.
Yeah, and I was thinking too, like, medical degree or the amount of knowledge, that's just like a standard that was created. There are other women who are probably doing the same thing, if a variety of things. But yeah, officially, how if that was under the criteria of medical degree, how many other people might have been women as well.
Yeah. So Elizabeth Anderson from the UK, she passed her physician exams in 1865. Like I said, first documented female physician in the UK. That was the same year that Dr. Barry died. The same year. So like 71 years later. 46 years after him becoming a doctor. Barry became a physician in 1812. He got to have an apprenticeship allowing him to witness dissecting of dead bodies and some operations. He learned quite a bit from that experience. In 1812, Barry moved back to London, started working with Astley Cooper at the St. Thomas Hospital. In 1813 is when Miranda had died, which meant that he wasn't going to be going to Venezuela as a doctor. But the army was in need of more educated doctors rather than the barber surgeons that they were using. And Barry had mentioned, like I said earlier, he wanted to be a soldier. So, with a friend, they went and enlisted in the British Army. Doctors were given private permanent quarters, which could have been another reason that had kind of been a draw for him. That would be kind of awkward to be in with the rest of the men and trying to be a man all the time. He started off as a commissioned officer in the medical department of the army. In 1860, Barry was stationed in Cape Town. It took 3 months to get to the Cape by ship. Later, another soldier had mentioned that Barry would kick him out in the AM so that he could get dressed in private. So I guess he did have to share with somebody, but on the ship, he was kicked out of the room so he could get dressed. Ship life would have been difficult, I think, and it's like going to the bathroom, being on your period. Like, I can't imagine trying to hide my femininity as a man all the time. In
Was there
Cape.
like, do you know if there's like a sentence, like, actually, just coincidence, we've been watching Mulan, my son loves that movie, and so we've been watching it recently, and it's like
Oh, yeah.
the cartoon version. And oh my goodness, I lost my train of thought. Anyways, oh yeah, but the penalty they say in there is death if she's found out and she's in the army or whatever. Was there anything like that kind of established, or was it kind of like,
I doubt it. I don't think that they would have considered her a traitor or something like that. It wasn't that harsh. I think they would have just kicked her out. Because when they did find out after she had gotten caught, they sealed the army records for 100 years. So nobody could see where she went or what she had done for 100 years. And they kind of just brushed it under the table. They didn't want to talk about it. But there was plenty of other people that wanted to. Once it was found out, all these people that kind of had a feeling that she was, that he was a she, all of a sudden was like, ah, I knew she was a, that was a she. So it kind of came out like that because even though he was dressed like a man and he had the uniform, he didn't walk like a man and didn't hide the voice. They described his voice as being high pitched and little hands like a woman, a smooth face like a woman, and so they kind of described it as such, but he had the haircut of a man and he dressed like a man and had the temper like a man. He portrayed a temper and even got himself into duels, got himself into trouble all the time, which I'll talk about. But yeah, I don't think they would have killed him. I think that the British Army would have been a little bit more civil. in Cape Town, the governor of Cape Town was Lord Charles Somerset. He was a widower with several children. In this town, there was about 15,000 settlers from the UK, and besides taking care of the settlers, Barry took care of prisoners, both black and white, and he became the governor's personal physician. Lord Charles Somerset expressed publicly his confidence in Barry, which he continued to do throughout his lifetime. He was Barry's biggest advocate, which he really needed. Anytime Barry came across a problem or was passionate about trying to fix something, Lord Charles was there to help and backed him up all the time. Dr. Barry was rather short for a man, had heels inserted into the shoes, and probably seemed rather eccentric. Like I said, he had a high-pitched voice. Didn't seem like he tried to hide or make it into a male voice, and was described as effeminate. And the fact that he didn't grow hair was not lost on others. He had short temper and often got into trouble and no patience for regulations or rules being followed. If he said that we should do something this way and people didn't, he had no patience for that. He had no tolerance for cruelty or oppression. He treated all races equally and was an advocate for anti-slavery, which at that time was still going on. Dr. Barry was thought of as witty, cultured, and even would go out of his way to flirt with women at dinner parties and stuff. But there was no reports of him actually dating anybody. He was just a big flirt. They said in several places that he was very good at conversation with at dinner parties and very charming. Unless he had a problem going on in his life, then that's all he talked about. There was reports that he'd get so focused on whatever problem he was facing that's all he talked about. And that became a bore to dinner guests. So I think that was a little more later in his life. But in the beginning, I think he was overcompensating, trying to make sure everybody knew that he was a man.
Mm.
And in his own quarters, like his own home, he did have a servant. He always told the servants never to come into the bedroom. Like they had a standing order not to ever go in. If someone called Dr. Barry effeminate, he would get very upset. He was known to carry a whip and a sword and was a good shot. And it even challenged someone to a duel and won. He also had a poodle with him all throughout his life. He always had a poodle and all of their names were the same. Psych. I guess that makes it easier so you don't have to learn a new dog's name. Or maybe you get attached to one dog and you're like, when it dies, you're heartbroken. So you just get another dog with the same name, same look.
That sounds like so easy to say. Oh, he's wanting to say, hey, psych, I'm a woman.
Oh, that's a good point.
Like, please, somebody pay attention. I really,
yeah. But I need to be found out. This is exhausting. No,
like almost subconscious.
That's a good point.
He did fight.
Sometimes he would travel with a goat in order to have fresh milk, too. And he was a vegetarian. In the time Barry was in Cape Town, he would make some enemies. Barry was so passionate and was pretty much the first social reformer in Cape Town. He was very ahead of his time. He believed in cleanliness and providing the best care to his patients, no matter what station in life they were in. Didn't matter if they were a leper or a prisoner or a slave. He treated everyone the same. Throughout Barry's career, no one ever questioned Barry as a physician. He was very respected in that regard. But as far as his own being, he got made fun of a lot. Now, Barry and Lord Charles often faced rumors about them being involved in an affair because he was his personal assistant and because Lord Charles was kind of a hypochondriac, he was often taking care of him or the family. So they were together quite a bit. And so rumors had started and they were both rumors of like they're two males that are together, or that Barry really is a woman and they're together. And they would put signs up in the town with these rumors, and it was making them both pretty upset. In 1821, Lord Charles went to London and brought back a wife, perhaps to squash the rumors of there being an affair. Because, like I said, he was a widow up to this. So Barry did continue to serve as the family doctor. In 1817, Barry started a leper colony that was very much needed. And in 1820, many of the English settlers that came to town were coming with whooping cough and measles and smallpox. So Barry also had to deal with that and helped organize quarantine regulations and implemented things like cleanliness and hygiene. God forbid that they didn't follow those things, and would burn the sheets or wash the actually, I don't think they burned them. I think they washed them in the ocean. Side note, in 1820, Napoleon was prisoner and got sick, and Barry was called to see him, but he died before he could see him. So we never got to meet Napoleon, but that would have been kind of interesting. Ross. Yeah. In 1822, Barry became a colonial medical inspector, but also stayed as a part-time assistant surgeon in the army. And in this capacity, colonial medical inspector's job was to inspect all the drugs that were imported to make sure they really are what they were supposed to be, granted licenses to doctors, apothecaries, midwives, and to supervise medical practice. Barry was given a really hard time in this role. They wouldn't provide a secretary. They wouldn't give him supplies. They wouldn't even give him the mail or a newspaper. Those in the medical committee thought that there was others that were more qualified than he was, but it was probably more political than all that. Barry was cracking down on quack medicine sellers and apothecaries that were practicing as physicians or surgeons, and even the midwives. So he was really cracking down on that. And there was one guy whose son was an apprentice, but never really did medical school, and was trying to become in the family business. And the father was like, well, he's done so many years, he's qualified. But Dr. Barry's like, no, he doesn't have the right credentials and wouldn't give him a license to practice. And that was a huge problem. And then that was another way he made enemies. So he made enemies all over the place. People did not like, well, they probably just didn't like change. They didn't like these new regulations. Everybody feels like, well, the way we're doing things is the best way. He also cracked down on district surgeons to make sure that they were doing night calls, as well as to make sure that they wouldn't refuse seeing prisoners or paupers or even the police. And they were supposed to do it free of charge, but bill the city. And Barry also came up with a system for smallpox vaccine injections. Sounds like we could use that about right now with organizing our COVID vaccines.
Yeah.
There was a hospital in Cape Town founded by a naval surgeon that he ran until he ran out of money. So after he ran out of money, the hospital pretty much was crap. But there was a lunatic ward with about 15 people, and Dr. Barry went and saw them, found that it was so dirty, unorganized, unprofessional, found that there was a sane woman stuck there, a patient with a head injury that needed medical attention. There were some patients that didn't have beds or blankets, including a 100-year-old woman. Two sane men were found, and then there was others that just needed medical attention. And of course, he filed a complaint. That's his favorite thing to do, is file complaints. Whenever there's things that are wrong, he files complaints. He goes by the book, like he does what he's supposed to do. You're supposed to file reports and stuff. Mm-hmm. He was very passionate for those that couldn't help themselves. And this was around the time when madhouses in London were being investigated for the mistreatment, such as leg irons and chains and straitjackets. He's kind of like a doctor and a nurse all wrapped up in one, because normally doctors don't have the greatest bedside manner, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes. Not all of them. Please, please, any doctors listening right now, don't be offended. But they're not known for their bedside manner. And usually nurse practitioners are. So it's kind of like he's kind of like both a really good doctor, surgeon, and a passionate advocate for patient care. In 1822, one of the problems of contention was the leper colony. Lepers were escaping in order to find food. So Barry made the trek to go see what was going on. The doctors weren't treating them. Staff was not taking care of them. There was little food or clothing. They slept on the floor. They were made to work in the garden, even if they were sick. And Barry was very upset, made it a priority to improve the place. So, of course, making all these rules and then Lord Charles sending his approval, he tried to get medical treatment, get hygiene, comfort, a diet. So those looking after the place did not like Barry's interference, but it was important to him and he would not back down. He also did something similar with the prison. Dr. Barry, like I said, had plenty of enemies as an inspector, and they tried hard to get rid of him, including trapping him with a patient that was put in an asylum. I'm not going to tell that story, but they did try to trap him and they eventually got their way. But he did resign before they fired him. But not everyone disliked Barry. Many had great faith in his ability as a doctor, such as Thomas Munnick. In 1826, a rich snuff merchant asked for Barry. His wife was very ill in labor, and when he went to go see her, he made that real quick decision to perform a C-section with no anesthesia, no antiseptics. He'd never seen a C-section performed, let alone done it, but he knew of it and was very successful in saving the mother and the baby boy. The baby was named after him, James Barry, and he was named the godfather. And he kept in touch with the boy for the rest of his life.
Wow.
They used to write letters. The family is still around, and the other podcast, What's Her Name, talks about that. So that is an interesting story, but they're still around. But it's said that they, even today's Barry family, feels like they knew he was a woman. Like their ancestors knew. She was a woman. He was a woman. In 1827, Barry was promoted to staff surgeon and assigned to Mary Terrace. I don't know how to say this name, but it's an island off the southeast coast of Africa. It's just east of Madagascar in the Indian Ocean. So after 12 years of becoming the Cape Town's first social reformer, he had to start over getting to know a new place. And Barry found trouble in this place too. He had only stayed there 10 months, tried to make changes, just made enemies, and then he went back to England without asking, because I think it's because they were writing reports about him or complaining about him, and he wanted to go tell his side of the story before the letters got there. But when he got there, he ended up staying in England for a year to help Lord Charles, who was then back in London. Lord Charles got replaced in Cape Town by someone else, but he got real sick. So Barry was kind of nursing him back to health. But Lord Charles did die later that year, 1831, after having a seizure out while riding. In 1831, Barry was assigned to Jamaica. He ended up not going right away because, like I said, he was helping with Lord Charles. But he cared for the troops there, and it was a pretty bad situation. 1 out of 9 soldiers died within their first year of being there. He tried to get cleanliness and order to the living conditions, but without success. He tried to get captains to prevent the men from doing drills during the hot part of the day. That didn't go over well. There was another place too that he served in an island that he was trying to get them to not to try to prevent sunstroke, and that didn't go over well either. Because the barracks were on marshy grounds, that meant that they were near a lot of mosquitoes, which carry yellow fever. Men were getting no recreation, and the tubs that they would use for urinals were also the same tubs they use for washing. So, logically, you would know that's pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
Soldiers were dying of dysentery and yellow fever, and like I said, it was just hot and just bad. So I'm sure with such empathy for patients' welfare, this assignment had to be extremely hard for Dr. Barry, especially since death could be preventable. Mm-hmm. St. Helena was the next assignment, and he took charge of both the civilian and the military wings of the regimental hospital. The island had only been in UK possession for 2 years, so it was fairly new for them. It took 72 days to get there by ship. They did dock in certain places, but 72 days. And it was, I read that Dr. Barry did not quite like ship life or didn't like being on a ship. And I don't know if he'd get seasick or I don't know what he didn't like about it, but that's a long time. And while on the ship this time, there was an outbreak of smallpox. So once they got there to the island, then he took care of that quarantining as well. He assessed the situation when he got there, and this time his enemy was the commissary general, Mr. Knowles. I think because he was trying to get supplies and to save money by getting wholesale supplies for both wings, and they said no. So he kept trying to prove his point that it would save money and would highlight regulations and rules, but they kept saying no. So he did what he always does, and he wrote a letter to the Secretary of War. Secretary of War is like way up there on the ladder, and explained the regulations, and he eventually won the battle. But it cost him. So they started doing wholesale supplies and saved money. But the fact that he went over their heads got him an arrest warrant. After a crazy, silly trial, he was let off but asked to leave. He did make changes, though, while he was there. Patients did get better under his care, and they did save money. They did separate the units from the females and the lunatics. He didn't get separate hospitals. He was trying to get a hospital just for the civilians, but didn't see that happen until after he was left. And it was said that after he left, that patient care went back to poor. 1845, while stationed in Trinidad, Dr. Barry came down with yellow fever. He gave instructions to the doctor that if he should die, roll his body up in sheets and nightshirt and bury him without a final exam. And he was in Trinidad for 3 years, doing the same things that he always does, trying really hard to help the people. Then in 1846, the Crimea at Malta is where he spent the next 5 years. As principal medical officer, in all the years of practice, Barry kept up with the newest medical information. In all the years of practice, Barry kept up with the newest medical information, and up until then, the causes of diseases like cholera and typhoid were still unknown. It was thought that it was still something in the air. But because Barry's belief in a clean and orderly environment, things did improve. There were open sewers near pigsties, which were near drinking water, that was a concern. Though more about the cleanliness than knowing why, he addressed his concerns in complaints, of course. Except he was more careful and more diplomatic than he had been in the past. After Malta, there was Corfu, an island in the Mediterranean. Honestly, I don't know how many areas the UK controls. Like, there's like tons of these little places like I've never heard of until I was researching, and I had to look on the map. Where is this? There's a lot, right?
I think so. I think I've seen a joke about how many Independence Days are based in, being released from Britain.
I'm gonna have to look that up and see how that all works. I don't know if there's still like this Corfu is still in there, or Saint Helena, or all this, if they're still in their empire. But yeah, it's interesting. Do they vote? Do they only? Is it like a state? I don't know. I'm gonna look it up someday. Dr. Barry got promoted all the way to Deputy Inspector General. Here he took care of patients that got brought in from the Crimean War. Here he took care of patients brought from the Crimean War. What? How do you say it?
Ooh, I don't know.
The Crimean War. Here he took care of patients brought from the Crimean War. Blah, 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 blah. He quickly got the men who would be treated back to the war. He treated cholera, fever, bullet wounds, and even frostbite. They were very impressed with how quickly he would get people well, but he kept saying they need rest, but they put them back to work pretty quickly because, of course, they needed the soldiers. And those that couldn't, he would get them sent home. So the war made the public more aware of the conditions that resulted in changes. Barry made sure that there was order and cleanliness, something that Florence Nightingale also preached. Do you know of Florence Nightingale? Well, you're
A
not in the medical
nurse?
field. Yeah, she's a nurse. She's not the first nurse, obviously, but she developed a guideline for what a nurse should be.
Okay.
And I'd never wanted to do a podcast on her because, or an episode, because it just seems so obvious to me that who she is. And a lot of other podcasters who do medical or females will usually do one on her. And I've heard some episodes that are really good about Florence Nightingale. But pretty much she went to this war, kind of forced her way in to go help these people and tried to make orderly changes, like for cleanliness and hygiene. And so she is the one that pretty much got the credit for bringing it to the public attention. Well, no, not her bringing it to the public attention. She got credit for making changes after it was made public. She brought with her a bunch of nurses as well, and the men didn't really care for that too much with them coming in. But pretty much she was like telling the doctors, you tell us what you want done and we'll do it, but at the same time was trying to get order. It was like kind of like an office manager, making sure there was supplies, making sure the men got what they needed, like the nursing part of nursing. So the doctors didn't have to worry and can concentrate on trying to heal them. Anyway, Dr. Barry was not liked by Florence Nightingale and was later afraid that she might say something to the Queen about him, since she did have the ear of the Queen after she got home. But honestly, Dr. Barry tried at every place to provide a healthier environment to no avail. And here comes this bossy nurse who's getting all kinds of credit and accolades after one war. One of Nightingale's supporters, Mrs. Bracebridge, lectured on the ill treatment of the army surgeons and how horrible the hospital environment was. It was stated her examples were false, but had a strong effect. Dr. Barry defended his army surgeon and hospital and put that all in a report, of course. Florence was the heroine when she got back to England and went to the Queen and the War Office to set up a royal commission to fix the sanitary conditions in both army barracks and the hospital, which, like I said, Dr. Barry's been trying to do for years. Years and years, and nobody wants to listen to him. He gets in trouble everywhere he goes. After a little time off, Barry was stationed in Canada. This was the first time out of tropical weather. He traveled between Montreal, Quebec, Kingston, and Toronto. He tried getting running water there and better sewage systems in the barracks, and even suggested so that the men could have a more variety of food that they get an oven, because only had a stovetop, and even tried to get them books. So it was kind of like not only a nurse and a doctor, but also kind of a social worker as well. And he was kind of like it all. In 1859, Dr. Barry got the flu and bronchitis and was sent back to London to be in forced retirement. He wrote a letter, of course, trying to get that changed, but they wouldn't have him come back. It just ended up retiring, did some traveling. After Barry's forced retirement, he traveled like to Jamaica and some other places, but ended up dying from dysentery in 1865 at age 71. A woman named Sophia Bishop took care of the body and was the one that discovered that Dr. Barry was, in fact, a female. The doctor who signed the death certificate said he didn't care if it was a male or a female. But she was, for some reason, Sophia was very upset about it. She also may note that due to the stretch marks, Dr. Barry had had a baby at some point. Even though the army sealed Dr. Barry's records for 100 years, the secret that Barry kept for so long was leaked out. And in hindsight, many thought they knew all along that he was a she. Dr. Barry died with the title of officer on the tombstone. Now, I don't know about the baby. There's no record of it. It could have been maybe from before she became a he. It could have been Lord Charles's baby, because there was a point where he went to take leave at this other island, and that was about 2,000 miles away, and was there for a while. So maybe he had a baby there. Don't know. But it's an interesting mystery.
That is, like, what? The baby's a complete surprise.
Yep. I had to keep something surprised. Because it's kind of hard to keep a surprise that she was a female the whole time.
And there's no writing? I guess she didn't keep a journal or anything like that?
No, the only writing is mostly the reports and letters that were written over the years for the army.
I'm curious if she was, if the conflict that might have been with Florence Nightingale might have been like something kind of influenced by the fact that now times have kind of changed, or something happened to where Florence could still be a woman and still have an easier time, where she's been trying to set, you know, like that she could be herself and have this difference. If there's no indication that she actually wanted to be a man, or that she was a man, that she was trans.
I think the problem with Barry and Florence was because of the way Barry treated Florence. There is a time, in fact, this is in the other podcast, where he snapped at her because she was sending over patients that were all filthy. Like, clean them up before you send them to our hospital. And because I think she was working in like a clinic or off the hospital type place that was really, really filthy. And that was kind of, she took over and she was fixing it. But he just rubbed her the wrong way. And I think that's how they got off on the wrong foot. Plus, she may have also been judging him like she was judging the other surgeons, perhaps. Florence went and was trying to help, but she wasn't accepted well. They weren't, like, so happy to see her. They were pretty much annoyed having to deal with these women. They didn't see the benefit quite yet. But she kind of forced her way in. Like I said, she's a little bossy, made a lot of all these changes. They were helpful, but I don't think that at the time, the doctors recognized that. It wasn't until later that it was recognized. And like I said, she got the ear of the queen, also another female. But Barry was complaining to the higher-ups. The higher-ups don't care in the army if you want to make changes to... You want blankets? Those cost money. You want beds? Those cost money. They're prisoners. Let them sleep on the floor. Like, they don't think of the humanity. They mm-hmm. think of the bottom line, I think. So I think they just had different channels of the way they were trying to make changes. Where yeah. she was able to make her changes because... Probably not because she was female, but because of whose ears she had. There was even a time when one of the cities she was in had a sewer problem. Even Cape Town, she fixed the sewer system there and didn't get credit for all of these things. And
Florence kept, or Barry?
Barry. And kept getting opposition everywhere he went. Like, he was really trying, like, especially in the leper colony. He really did see the power of cleanliness and hygiene. And he just kept getting put off by everybody. And because it takes money to have proper beds and proper blankets and clothing and food. That was another thing is, like, the prisoners and the lepers and hospital even were not being fed well. And so to get better, you need proper nutrition.
Yeah.
So all of these things, like Dr. Barry was trying to see the whole picture and he just kept getting thwarted. Yeah.
I think I'm curious about, because if there's a possibility, if it wasn't like kind of like the compensation too, like you can't be too, because why would you not kind of team up with Florence if she's having, if she's got the queen's ear and it's kind of like, well, can't be too buddy-buddy or show preference when the consensus is we don't care for.
Well, he didn't see the cleanliness part of her. What he knew was she had sent patients over to the hospital who were not clean. So he assumed she wasn't clean. It wasn't till later, I guess, that because he didn't actually work in the same. So he didn't work in the same place as she did. Mm-hmm. He worked elsewhere out of another city. Nearby, but on leave he went to where they were fighting the war, and there's no record or reports of what he saw, which probably meant he wasn't upset because he pretty much only wrote when he was upset or wanted a change. So maybe he did see the changes that she was making at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I could if, you know, I know I'm oversimplifying, but if her belief is that as a man, she could have, at least she wouldn't.
Barry.
She would have, yeah, Barry would have the standard pushback. Like, everybody has some type of pushback because nobody wants the system to change. But a female would have unreasonably amount of pushback. Whereas a man would, you know, the belief is that she... That he wouldn't have.
So what I think what you're saying is, like, because he was a man, he should have been able to get these changes made.
Not well, like that it would be a normal obstacle of pushback, right? That when, yeah. As a woman, you would have more.
But I
that
agree. Way,
that's why he would go through the channels of submitting paperwork and complaining right. and raising his voice, because he's already got the criteria down. This is normal for at least right. some
I
pushback.
I think
right?
the problem, though, I thought about that too. I agree. You would think, okay, well, he's a man. It should be easier. But I think it was because the way he did things, he was argumentative and annoying and kind of like the thorn in everybody's shoe. But I think it was because of his temperament and the way he approached things. He didn't do things politically correct. Well, not politically correct is the right word. He didn't do things in a political way. Like, he wasn't very good at expressing what the needs were. He was more demanding. And when you tell another man how to behave, it doesn't really go over well.
Yeah, well,
especially
yeah,
when there was doctors that were higher than him that were, he was in charge of doctors that had more experience and that were probably more qualified than he was. And he's telling them how to change. So I don't, that's just a theory. And like I said, the fact that most people thought he was a woman anyway, or effeminate, maybe they just saw him in a way, maybe they thought he was gay and also didn't want to listen to him.
But oh, yeah, he was, maybe.
It was kind of, like I said before, he was going through the channels of the army, and even though he was a man, they didn't listen to him. And she was going through the channels of the public and the queen, the Florence.
Yeah. Well, like kind of separate, like I said, I do think there would be a normal amount of pushback for anybody. But, you know, as a woman, not so much. But anyways, but past that problem, like if you're a man, I think anybody raising a lot of concerns for change is going to be met with pushback. And and that it, even though he might have gone about it in a way that's still considered fine if you're a man, you know, like it's kind of it's just too many changes, too much caring, and too much, like, we're not used to. And I don't think it's necessarily because that he was a woman, like if he didn't want to be, like if he still identified himself as a woman, I don't think that's why he was more empathetic. I think it's coming from a background of like knowing what it is to be excluded or not listened to or looked at less mm-hmm. as less than, so that he would be more empathetic or want changes.
Yeah, but you would think that might come over time, whereas
like the knowing,
like
how
the empathy
approach.
And all that. Yeah, I think he pretty much was that way from the beginning.
No, that's No, I'm talking about like just having grown up and knowing that, hey, I have to change my identity. And so it kind of like, okay. So one of the supporting reasons for that thought is because, you know how, like you said, and we've talked about this a couple of times, is like doctors are not known for their bedside manner. And a lot of times, the way the system is kind of set up is if you have a good memory, you're organized, that's the criteria for being qualified after like studying and you get all this information, but you don't have to have that bedside manner. And a lot of times it's kind of like a family thing. You're kind of expected to get into this field. So it's not because you necessarily wanted to help people sometimes, not saying that for everybody, but that's kind of like you kind of get into this boys club, right? And so in the boys club, you don't expect a lot of change because you're getting all the benefits and you don't have to worry about somebody complaining about your manners or how you're treating them or whatever. Anyway, so that would also be off-putting to have somebody say, you know, we need to change how we do this. And they're like, I don't want to do more work than I need to. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is just the standard. It just made sense to him as a logical person to request these changes, like, and that would be irritating if you're like, you're not trying to, because another thing was like playing politics. Usually you're playing politics and you're not advocating for people because you're trying to get ahead, so you are strategic about how you ask for things. Well, that's not, you know, at least from what I've heard, Barry's point.
Barry was not good at it.
It was all about change. It was like, this just makes sense to change. Why is everybody being dumb about this?
And the fact that he was stepping on toes to do these things, but he did try to go through the proper channels, and then they just weren't having it. So he's like, okay, I'm gonna go over your head.
Yeah,
but yeah, he was always getting himself into trouble. But like I said, he also had a temper. I think that there was at one point he had a whip and he hit somebody in the face with it. One of the sergeants or drill sergeants or something.
Well, who wouldn't want to do that?
Because he called him effeminate. Okay. Hams.
Oh, you got to defend that.
Whip.
That's good. I was, I was thinking like how dangerous it could have been as a younger person and needing to know self-defense. But I think you mentioned like he even won a duel and stuff. So that's really good. Like he probably did have to get.
I wonder too if someone did find out and then rape her and had the baby.
Oh, yeah, that's a. Well,
because then they're not going to, because if she admitted that he was raped, I keep going back on the pronouns. I don't mean to. If Barry told on the rapist, then he would be found out that he was a woman.
Yeah. There's so many.
So I'm wondering. I know. It's a mystery. It's an interesting mystery.
Or couldn't they've even had a miscarriage or, you know, like we.
You
or,
wouldn't
you know,
necessarily have the stretch markets if you got that far into the pregnancy.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. So it'd be like
Because that's the only evidence that there was a baby.
Yeah. And even then.
And I've never had a baby, so I didn't know. I don't know if all women have stretch marks when they have a baby.
I think that's a genetic thing. Like some do not get stretch marks and some do. But I remember talking to you about stretch marks like years ago, and it's like you can get stretch marks from growing too fast. And whereas I thought, oh, that means weight loss, but no, it can be any amount of changes, any changes to your skin. So,
well,
I don't know.
He was kind of petite, so I don't think it was from gaining a bunch of weight really quickly.
Mm.
He wasn't a big guy. Barry was tiny little woman in big army clothes. And he always dressed to the nines. Always had his uniform all nice.
Yeah, and very, like, what about the, because, you know, for people who are, you know, in hindsight saying, oh, I always knew, or I thought about this, like, you can't rely on that either. When you think back on something, because at any given moment you have, like, I don't know how many thoughts going through your head, because you've also got subconscious thoughts. And so, like, once something happens, you're like, oh, I remember I thought that, but you actually thought like a few other things, and that's the one that you're focusing on now.
Right.
And so you're like, I was right. But like, no, think back. You were thinking a couple other things at the same time.
Yeah.
So,
hindsight. Yep. Yeah, I agree. I would go as far as saying maybe I knew something was off, but didn't quite know.
Yeah. I do that all the time. I'm like, I want to be right. Like, ah, I knew it. I almost cursed. I said, B, you did not know. You know, like, can we curse on here?
Yeah.
Okay. I would have been like, bitch, you didn't know. Otherwise, you would have made a different decision. You know, like, we all, don't worry about it. We don't have to be right.
Now I was going to say something. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, there was a man who wrote a book about her, did a biography soon after he died, and was pretty much saying the same thing. Oh, I knew it was a woman, and then did this biography.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's awesome if you can, after the fact, just be completely ignorant to the idea that, like, oh, yeah, I was right. Like, I wish I could do that, but I just second guess everything. I'm like, no, I didn't. Let's just be
realistic. It's funny, you know,
be realistic.
You would think that these people would get mad that they've been duped, or, you know, because, well, obviously they were embarrassed and they hid the reports for 100 years. You would think that they would be embarrassed because they were duped for so long. Like, the army didn't even know they had a female amongst them. And all of the patients and all of these people are like, oh my God, this whole time there was a female looking after me. And they could have been mad. But in the reports that I read, all of the things that were like the revelations after, none of them seemed like they were upset that a female got through the system. There was a female doctor. There had never been a female doctor before, unless you count midwives. But there was like never one before. So I didn't read anything like that where the people were upset. Just that the government was trying to hide it. I thought that was interesting.
I wouldn't think embarrassed just because, you know, well-known person. It's like embarrassment goes down when you're experiencing the same thing as other people. Like, oh, it's not because I didn't catch it, or it wasn't, or that it was obvious or anything. We're going through this together. If anything,
then why
I feel
hide
like,
it?
He
went from a recruit all the way to the highest office you could hold as a doctor.
A lot of times, like, I go to this, I think when we go to different podcasts, it's like, it's just easier. It's because even finding out, so say you didn't, because that's what they find out, is they really didn't know this person. Or at least, no, not to say that they didn't really know them, but that, I take that back. But it's like, they didn't know this one area of them, and so like, what else didn't they know? Anyways, but when that kind of change happens, you kind of like, I think of it like kind of like a computer. You've got an update, and now you have to go through you have to update your whole computer, everything you know about like, or this file or whatever, and you like have to,
you have to rethink everything, everything you thought you
yeah
knew.
And so like that can be fun, it can be new, you go through every scenario and you're like, how did that I look at that a little bit differently, you know. And so that alone by itself is work, it's mental energy or whatever. But yeah, for the other, for like the regulators and people trying to like seal it, it's more like, well, what does this mean? Should this, should we allow women to be doctors now? And they're like, oh shit, no, I don't want to, I don't want to waste time on that. Like I have, I don't want to be, I don't want to go home to my wife right now. Like I have cousins coming into town and I don't want to talk to them. Like, let's not, I don't want to reform the system. Let's just seal it up. And they're like, yeah, I don't, this is bullshit. I don't want to do it either. So they're like, yeah, let's just tell the news reporters it's sealed.
Nope. It's fake news.
Judge, it was all fake. No, that didn't happen. And then my grandchildren, when, you know, because they're going to be lawmakers too, they can handle this if they want to, but just not me.
Yeah, it's interesting though, right? To think about.
Going through
this whole process, this whole life, as a male, 46 years as a male.
Yeah. And you, like, that's, I feel like the scenario of let's just seal it, be done with it and move on. Like, we've got other things going on that need our attention is like a realistic one. But ideally it would have been like, oh, she was a woman. She didn't say that she wanted to be a man. We have no evidence of that.
Well, there is something sad that I should mention. It's in that other podcast. They found the trunk, one of her trunks, when they opened it, it had a lot of pictures of, like, fashion pictures.
No.
Like, for magazines. And I wonder if, like, she had this, he had this secret life of, like, wanting to have been a woman.
Yeah, and remember I said that's might have. I wonder if that was an underlying factor with Florence, like, not teaming up with her, but instead subconsciously having this, like, you know how, like, there's some stories where it turns out you actually idolize a person that you're hating, like, because you're jealous, you know, like, you wish, you want that, like, oh, you know, I have to continue this charade. Like, even I've already thought about my death and I'm not going to allow them to even know after that. Like, that's how committed and to it. And so to think that somebody else doesn't have to do that, they can represent themselves however they want, but she's having to do it a certain way, or, you know, he.
I know it's hard to go back and forth on the pronouns.
Yeah, unfortunately, like, and I think it would be easier if we knew how they felt. Yeah, yeah. It's felt and thought, then it would be much easier. But since we're like that, we have no evidence of that. It's difficult. Yeah. I think it definitely makes it, it's like, it's still worth trying to keep it to the him, because it can get so mixed up with the other, with, like, so when I mentioned Florence, it's like, at least that can be the little separator. But that's what I was thinking, is like, I wonder if there is some, like, under, like, maybe something that she wasn't aware of, or he wasn't aware of how he was treating, instead of, like, being excited and wanting to help her along. Like, oh, you've got the queen's ear. Let's take advantage of this and get this, all this other
team
stuff.
Up,
like,
and
just like kind of wink, you know, like, I'm with you, you know, like,
instead of being in the shadows afraid that he might get caught.
Yeah. So a very brave person for doing what he did. Very kind. And like, it's so like, how many lives did he affect? Because we're, you know, there's some major stories or whatever, or like, sections of stories or whatever, but they're, when someone's nice, like, over, like, someone's helped you get through a pain or illness or whatever, you remember that person, and it's passed on to other aspects of your life and how you treat other people. So, like, this has, and especially to have traveled to so many different places, like, how, you know, we know that he did a lot of good, but we probably don't know the scope of it, like, it's because it's just impossible that to know.
You made a comment about how many lives that he might have touched and saved, and it got me immediately thinking of some of the research that I'm about to do on a K killer nurse.
Ah, crap. Oh, of course it did. I like to be, I like to think I'm all positive and bubbly, but it just always goes there. Like, it just goes there.
I bring you down.
Same thing with you. Like, you're like, oh, well, what about this, though? And I'm like, dang it.
I know.
Why are we like this?
I was thinking that, okay, maybe it'll balance out in the universe somehow. Where Dr. Barry's saving all these lives, but this killer nurse.
Right when I said, oh, imagine how much good he's done. I feel good. I can think about the good I've done. And then it's like, you are a shit person. I'm like, oh, wait. Yeah, you're right.
How many lives have I ruined?
Yeah, right? How many lives have I unnecessarily just made? Like, I just ruined their day. My bad. Anyways.
Well, I love true crime, and I thought it would be a perfect episode addition to do a killer nurse or killer healthcare. So I'm going to be doing those in the next few months. I'm going to be doing them here and there where I talk about the crazy healthcare murderers.
Oh, my gosh. Experimenting with the okay.
Anyway, so
well, that's cool. Well,
more downers. But thank you so much for being on another episode with me, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's always like, I never know what it's gonna be or how I'm gonna feel down about myself or other things in the world.
Well, hopefully you don't. Hopefully you feel like.
No, this was a good one. I like this one.
It proved to the world that a female can be a good doctor.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
she proved it for 46 years. She showed them.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, you take it easy. Listeners, thank you for being here, and we'll catch you in the next episode.
All right. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's mental vacation from your current life. If you did and are curious for more, please subscribe. Before you go, if you have anything to add to today's show, or you have a topic that you think is worthy of dissection, please reach out on dissectingmedicalhistory.com or Instagram on dissectingmedicalhistory. Thank you, and stay curious.